Hi, I'm Riley Fessler. I'm a podcast producer here at the DSR Network, which means that my job is to make sure that we have great content and great guests across all of our shows. Our programming is supported by our members, and for that, we are truly grateful. I hope that you'll consider becoming a member to support the work that we do. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack and Discord communities. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
This is Words Matter with Norm Ornstein.
We've got the votes and screw the rest of you.
And Dr. Kavita Patel.
These might be some of the smaller moments, you know, with all the bombshells. Didn't catch people's eyes.
Welcome to a special combo episode of our members only and what's accessible to anybody who wants to listen podcast called Words Matter from the DSR Network. This is a special edition because Norm Ornstein and I are discussing some of the very important arguments that were made on Tuesday, March 26th during the Supreme Court hearing of the plaintiffs, Hippocratic Alliance, the United States Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine versus the United States. That's the correct order, plaintiff and defendant. And it's such a special episode that we wanted to just make sure, one, everyone could listen to it, and two, we're going to try not to do what's probably easy to find on your favorite social media platform, but we want to try to highlight some of the issues as Norm and I discuss them around topics that might not necessarily come to the front of your Twitter threads. And so, Norm, I think, first off, impressions that you had from listening to the justices and just the back and forth between the plaintiffs and defendants and the Solicitor General, as well as all three women, by the way, we should point out, if that were representing the United States Food and Drug Administration and the federal government's point of view, and then to Danco, which is the manufacturer of Mifeprex, the mifepristone pill, and number three, the lawyer who was representing the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, in this case, the plaintiff, seven physicians who cite standing because of potential harm made by the FDA's decision to approve this and expand access to mifepristone, but all three women, so very notable. Norm, your thoughts?
Well, first, Kavita, when I saw the name of the plaintiff, I thought it must be a typographical error because it should be the Society for Hippocratical Medicine. I thought the Solicitor General was brilliant. She had such utter command, first of all, of the facts, including citing out of memory footnotes and passages. The lawyer for Danco was fantastic as well. It's hard for me to give any credit to the lawyer on the other side because she happens to be married to Josh Hawley, who is one of the worst of the worst in the Senate right now. But I really was first struck by the fact that the stars across the board, including the justices in this oral argument, were women, all of them. And, you know, it took me back to an earlier era. Sandra Day O'Connor finished second in her class at Stanford Law School and was only offered jobs as a secretary. My wife's class, they came in 1970 into Yale Law School, had 28 women out of 170 plus enrollees. Now it's a majority, but you think about what we lost, the brilliance. Of course, it's not just the law, but an earlier time, it wasn't as bad as the Taliban or other countries like Saudi Arabia excluding all of that incredible talent from helping to grow the country and the economy. But, you know, we lost an awful lot over decades and centuries. The second point is that Sam Alito remains somebody who I hold in contempt.
I've been waiting for this. Okay, yes.
You know, not only is he corrupt, but talk about somebody who comes to a case with his own preconceived conclusions and his ideology, and then struggles to find a way to cloak it in faux originalism to justify the conclusion he's already come to. This is the exact opposite of what you want in a jurist, whether it's the Supreme Court or any other court. And he was schooled today by the brilliant Ketanji Brown Jackson, among others. And then the third point, and then I will leave it up to you, is I breathed a sigh of relief through this hearing, because a good part of it was not about the substance, but about the standing of these plaintiffs, arguing not that they'd suffered an injury, not that they were on the verge of suffering an injury, but that it was all theoretical. And I think there are at least five and maybe seven justices who will argue in the end that they did not have standing. And that's for two reasons. One, I think a lot of these justices recognize full well the mess that they've gotten them into with the Dobbs decision, and that if they keep doubling down on that, it will take a court that is already reeling from a lack of legitimacy and disapproval by Americans, but make it that much worse. And the second is, there's no doubt to me that down the road, five justices or six are going to move to undercut the administrative state, do away with Chevron and other doctrines that enable agencies basically to act on behalf of the public. The last one they want to take on as the lead in that is the FDA. So I think they're going to punt on this one. And frankly, I'm fine with that, given the alternatives.
So just in your estimation, and let me, maybe it would be helpful since, you know, Norm, I don't think we'll blame people who are working and have like real jobs to kind of not necessarily pay attention to these topics constantly. So let me offer like what I would say is my, there's some beautiful threads you've tweeted about this, but I'm going to offer kind of in the moment a little bit of why we think this is going to be maybe, I don't know, 7-2, maybe 6-3, but still in favor of the administration, kind of in favor of like the FDA, holding kind of the standard of, around the FDA. But what I thought was interesting is that several kind of points that I'm going to give credit to Justice Amy Comey Barrett, people might be sleeping on and thinking she's just going to be kind of off, you know, with Alito and others. But there's a kind of a narrative that started where when Hawley, the lawyer for the plaintiffs, for the alliance, where Barrett asks Hawley how a doctor could know that a woman seeking, that was in the emergency room seeking kind of a DNC, had a viable embryo or fetus. Couldn't it have been a miscarriage? Could it have been something else? Or how could that, the conscience clause exemption not apply? Or what would be the situation where it's such a dire emergency and kind of all these things had to come to bear? Kagan, also, again, incredible justice, follows and says, again, and she kind of beats this point several times, by the way, but in this one particular narrative, Kagan kind of says the two doctors of the seven who are objecting because they were complicit in abortions for having to have performed a DNC after a woman used mifepristone, which is what two of the doctors claimed, and Hawley couldn't provide really any reason why those two doctors with their objections should then create complete kind of national disruption. Then you had Ketanji Brown Jackson, Justice Jackson, who kind of went on to say, like, look, DNCs are rarely used. There are additional things that are done. Like, it's not always like a DNC. So she wanted numbers and data. Hawley kind of sidestepped that. And then you get Clarence Thomas, who basically invites Hawley to say, well, what about the Comstock Act, objecting to kind of mailing, quote, lewd materials, that were the words he used, in the form of mifepristone, let's be clear, an FDA-approved abortion drug. So Tom is kind of going back to that Comstock Act, and then Kagan constantly kind of bringing up the very valid point about traceability. You have to show, in order to claim that the FDA kind of overstepped, you have to show that the injury is traceable to this 2016 and 2021 decision where the FDA allowed for pharmacies to provide these medications with their doctor's prescription, and then eventually moving to telehealth because of the pandemic. Hawley basically said, I don't need to show this direct traceability. We just need to show increased harm. We think traceability is satisfied by the FDA's own words. So I think that this is like, and then when she asked to kind of Kagan again, what is the harm? What is that additional harm? Hawley goes on to cite studies that have been retracted, Norm, never peer-reviewed, and have actually, by the publication, Sage Publications, been publicized and kind of apologies put out for these publications not meeting standards. And in some cases, the studies she's citing are like random physician blogs, like just random blog posts about how there were these like increased ER visits, et cetera. So nothing specific, nothing peer-reviewed, nothing citable. And the reason I think that thread of kind of here is important, and I started with Comey Barrett, is because it's very clear, like the justices are like, you need to show us this link for standing. And then you have this like random like gaslight, you know, this kind of bomb of Alito and Thomas throwing in Comstock, which I had to look up again because I forgot. It's like from what, Norm, 1890, yeah. Something like yeah. that.
And never, ever been enforced.
Never been enforced. And again, it was applied not for what we're talking about here, but around like pornography. Anyway, just you can maybe talk about Comstock and what it was meant to be used for, I guess, when it passed in, you know, the 19th century, which I can't believe I'm saying that. But let's actually connect this for listeners, something that I haven't seen any commentary today done. Let's connect this for listeners to the election, because here's my thought, Norman, I want to hear your thoughts. I think that if Trump wins, all he has to do is put in an FDA commissioner that can easily kind of come in and put in back incredibly restrictive measures. You can keep a drug approved, but you can put in back incredibly restrictive measures. You can paper this to essentially make any Supreme Court ruling moot and accomplish almost the same effect, right? I mean, Norm, I don't see anybody drawing that argument and distinction. To me, everything that happened today, it felt like one step forward. We put Donald Trump in place and he put some Looney Tunes show, which is what will happen, in charge of the FDA. Guess what happens? Not just to mifepristone. He'll put every drug that deals with choice and reproductive freedom under some severe REMS kind of risk. It's the REMS protocol, which is called Risk Evaluation Mitigation Strategy, which is what's in place for mifepristone and about 7 or 8 other drugs. And he'll put that in place. Am I wrong? What am I missing?
No, you're absolutely right. And that underscores the stakes of this election again. I have to say, watching Hawley do all of that made me think, well, she probably is the ideal partner for her husband, Josh Hawley, because they both have a level of mendacity that is off the charts. And, you know, the other thing that struck me is that the rigorous studies about mifepristone and the getting it by mail show that adverse effects are something like 0.3%, not even 1%. My guess is that a whole lot of other drugs that you and I and others get through the mail from our pharmacy benefits managers have significantly higher rates of adverse effects. And all you have to do is listen to any of the TV commercials about these popular drugs, which explain the adverse effects. They're not explaining them because they only affect 0.3%. This thing is absurd. Unfortunately, I think Barrett, who is showing to me signs that she, more than any of the other conservative justices, including the Chief Justice, is growing more and more sensitive to the damage to the integrity of the court that comes from these radical decisions, and is trying to find a way to create a different balance. I hope I'm right about that, because on the whole, she aligns with the rest of the radical justices. But I'm hoping that increasingly we're going to see the two worst, Thomas and Alito, end up on the wrong side of many 7-2 decisions, further discrediting them as if we needed any further evidence.
I also was impressed with Gorsuch. I mean, he didn't speak much, but I don't know if you agree, Norm, but I thought that Gorsuch and Comey, which we kind of knew about Gorsuch, right? Like we didn't, now I'm thinking in real time, where was Kavanaugh? Was he not? What happened to Kavanaugh?
I didn't hear a word from Kavanaugh.
Was he there? He must have been there, right?
To be sure, you know, I was mostly listening on cable news where they went in and out and part.
No, I listened to the whole thing. I had to cover it. I was interested in, two, I had the time. I listened to the entire thing. I don't remember Kavanaugh speaking.
No, I didn't see Kavanaugh at all. I will say with regard to Gorsuch, one of the real strong principles of the more conservative justices has been to use standing to greatly limit the access to the Supreme Court of a whole host of cases. Now, for the most part, those have been cases that benefit corporations and rich people. But I think Gorsuch, at least in this case, is being a little bit more true to the principle that you have to show real direct harm to have standing. I'll take that for now as a way out of this. But the other thing we ought to mention, Kavita, is, okay, we have this case in front of the court. We know that when they brought it up in the Fifth Circuit, that the radical judges there jumped all over it to try and achieve their goal. But we also know that Project 2025, run out of Heritage with the direct involvement of the Trump campaign, sees a path where you start with abortion, it'll move to a national abortion ban, it will include doing just as you say, making sure that mifepristone is not available except under onerous conditions, and then move on from there to a war against contraception, a war against gay marriage, a continued war which will move to recriminalize gay sex, and create a world in which the Handmaid's Act will look more like paradise, the Handmaid's Tale, excuse me. So we have to look at this case, and if it ends up the way we're hoping it does, breathe a small sigh of relief, but remember, just as you said, all of that could disappear if Trump wins another term.
Yeah, it could. And it just makes it even more important, I think. Just for me, it was a really direct line. Like, while I would like to say that today, there was a moment today where I felt, Norm, like, oh, thank goodness, right? Like, okay, fine, put Alito and Thomas to the side. Like I said, this could be, you know, however this decision comes down, but put them to the side. What a great time. But I was like, wait a minute. No, this is bad. This is still bad. And I can't help but think that, like, now that it's been pretty clear, like, how they might lose and on what basis, standing, for example, that they'll just find a way to create standing, right? I mean, it reminds me a little bit of, like, during COVID, all the courts that were forcing doctors to prescribe hydroxychloroquine inside of hospitals when we had no basis for doing it. It wasn't even, like, there was no science behind it. It was a medication used for parasites in horses and people, but not for COVID. And we had courts forcing people to do things like that. So you think about the potential unintended consequences, and they're pretty dramatic in this case.
Absolutely. And, you know, I was reading the other day a story about a couple that took aquarium cleaner and ingested it because it had as one of its ingredients hydroxychloroquine, and both died. You know, the consequences of this misinformation and disinformation were drastic, and not just because people didn't get vaccinated or tried to rely on treatments that were absurd or actually denied to people who needed drugs, lupus victims and others, the drugs that they needed because people scooped them up believing that nonsense. You know, it's a very difficult time. And when I look at Alito and Thomas, and I look at many occasions in which Kavanaugh and Roberts have joined them, and the Gorsuch often as well. It takes you to Alice in Wonderland. Verdict first, trial to follow. And we have to be very aware of, sensitive to, and concerned about situations where it's clear they bring their ideological biases right to the bench and then post facto come up with rationales. And this is something that former Justice Steve Breyer, in his really good interview with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press, and with the book that he's written, brings out that, you know, his pain that they were misusing this doctrine for their own purposes.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Kristen Welker's interview, because maybe that takes us into something that comes up as a little bit of a breaking news while we're recording this, but I think it'd be worth getting your take on it. And believe me or not, like, this is actually somewhat related to the Supreme Court hearing today, because it talks about the NBC News hiring and what looks like subsequent firing within, you know, days of the announcement that Ronna McDaniel is a paid NBC MSNBC correspondent. Then on Sunday, Meet the Press, there was a pretty dramatic intro to Kristen Welker's, that same interview of Stephen Breyer's that aired that same hour. She also had a live on-air interview with Ronna McDaniel, but had booked that interview prior to learning that she was going to be a paid contributor for NBC, the employer for Meet the Press and for Kristen Welker. And that generated so much backlash, so much so that at the end of the hour, when Chuck Todd, who was on their kind of roundup panel, basically said the network owed Kristen Welker an apology, and there was just a flurry of both internal and very public and high visible kind of proclamations, even by all the basically female anchors of MSNBC, including Rachel Maddow, Nicole Wallace, Stephanie Ruhle, who basically said, like, not on our network. And now, as we're recording this, kind of breaking news, Norm, that she's been let go and that she's retained counsel. Not a shock. I bring this up because we're talking about the Supreme Court, but we're talking about the political backlash. We're talking about the coverage. You and I have talked about the media. We need to do that media episode. But tell me your thoughts on this, and I'm not sure if you saw that news, but, you know, what a 48 hours it's been, starting with Meet the Press and ending on the Supreme Court hearing with this news after of her being let go from NBC.
So first, I've been plenty critical in the past of Meet the Press. Some of the guests that they brought on, with some of the interviews that Kristen Welker has done, but I also did it in the past with Chuck Todd and other moderators. I want to give her props for the interview that she did with Ronna McDaniel. You know, she stopped using Romney because Trump insisted on that. I'm guessing that now the Romney family is going to insist that she not use that name. And I'll give props to Chuck Todd. What a massive self-inflicted wound by a completely out-of-touch leadership at NBC News. And, you know, Ronna McDaniel is likely to walk away with $300,000 that she did not earn. I actually thought it would be better for NBC at this point to basically keep her contract going, but just not use her on any shows, so that she couldn't then dance off and become a commentator somewhere else. And she will probably find some right-wing network to do so.
It's funny you say that. I actually said the same thing to a colleague who works at NBC. I said, why not? You're going to have to pay her either way. You've got a contract.
Yeah.
Why not just keep her and never put her on TV? Because all contracts, including even my own, has like a carve. You can't go on any other network.
Yeah.
And you would imagine she's got that same exclusivity on there too. And so I'm a million thousand. I love that idea of keeping her on. I'm not sure that, although I think there's something just deplorative about like keeping someone on a payroll and handing them free money like that, which is, I'm sure, where, you know, some of this comes from. But, you know,
there's more to this than just the insensitivity of hiring somebody. And, you know, this pushback from Frank Luntz and others, Greta Van Susteren, they're trying to silence conservative voices. No, they're trying not to put on and legitimize serial liars and election deniers and insurrectionists. She actively tried to alter the election results in Michigan. So it's a very different case. But then you look at the reality that Kristen Welker was blindsided by her own network, that all of the other anchors and others had no idea. But also, all of the people who are on as paid contributors, my guess is that very few of them make close to $300,000, and they've laid off plenty in the name of fiscal responsibility. So it's a direct slap at so many people. And, you know, there's one other point we ought to make here, which is that this is not a new thing. And there is, you know, some reality to the struggle that television networks and newspapers with op-ed pages have, where they want to represent all of the different elements in the political arena. But you go back to CNN hiring Jeffrey Lord and Corey Lewandowski and others who they then had to fire when their scandals emerged, and other networks doing the same thing. Some of the absolutely cringeworthy contributors, paid contributors on op-ed pages like the Washington Post, Hugh Hewitt being a good example, but I can go on with more, and the Times and others as well. And it's tough. But you can find legitimate conservatives. I applauded the New York Times when they hired David French, who has proven to be an enormous asset, a conservative, but who is an honest figure out there. You can find people who represent Republican viewpoints, conservative viewpoints, without pandering to the worst instincts. And NBC News just soiled itself over and over again with this one, and it's not going to be forgotten.
I think it's one that's not going to be forgotten. And also, just I can tell you that, like, my guess, and I'm not no firsthand knowledge, but Norm, my guess is that all of this was done because there's this pressure to kind of appear, I don't even know what to say, balanced, provide diverse perspectives, something like that. Well, there's a way to provide, I know that this goes without saying, you and I know some Trump officials who could provide some very diverse perspectives, who would actually be, like, somewhat, you know, one I'd be more interested in hearing from and could actually be, like, productive in conversation, not someone who actually has supported not just election deniers and Donald Trump, but gone out of their way to not say anything about January 6th until, lo and behold, she was relieved of her RNC duty. And she can make a convenient comment such as, well, you know, when you're having to act on behalf of, like, a larger group, you take one for the team. But now I'm my own person. Give me a break. I mean, so I can't help.
I'm just following orders.
I'm just following order. Like, sorry, not me, you know, not it. I mean, it's just a, well, in any case, it's, we'll see. When do we think that we might expect a ruling, Norm, but going back to the Supreme Court case?
It'll take a while. And my guess is it'll take a while, in part because it's going to have to be very carefully crafted to get that supermajority of justices. And I would guess, as, you know, somebody not on the inside, but having seen a lot of these arguments go forward, that they're going to try and base their ruling entirely on the narrow issue of who has standing, not weigh in on mifepristone, maybe even not weigh in on the FDA and its expertise in these areas. It was one area, by the way, where Ketanji Brown Jackson just filleted Sam Alito as he tried to impugn the integrity of the FDA. And Jackson came back and talked about the medical expertise of justices.
Justices, I loved that. I know. That was when she won, like, you know, it's like, I love this woman. She's amazing. By the way, I was like, everybody has an opinion about doctors, but I don't mind if it's Ketanji Brown Jackson. So that's okay. Who is, by the way, married to a physician, or husband is an orthopedic surgeon, I believe, at George Washington University. So, all right. Well, that's our wrap for our combo episode. We hope that listeners learned a little bit and got just a little bit more feist to keep fighting and making sure that we get some folks out to vote, because I hope we painted a pretty clear picture. I want to thank you, Norm, for joining me. Thank everyone for listening. It would be helpful if you could rate, review, subscribe, and share this podcast on your favorite podcast player. And if you like this and want to get more of a conversation, return as a member and you can get bonus segments and certainly access to past bonus segments, as well as future events that are exclusive to members only. Words Matter is a production of the DSR Network. Our executive producer is Chris Cotmar, and our producer for our podcast is Riley Fessler. Our next episode of Words Matter will be in and on your podcast feeds around April 4th. See you then.